Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are coming to you with a New York Comic Con 2025 wrap-up. You know it is a wrap-up because Justin's wearing the hat. And I gotta say, it's a pretty sweet hat, Justin.
I like it. You know, I don't usually buy merch, but I got in the line. I'm always shocked there's a line for the con merch. It was like 20 minutes. But I got this, and I got a New York Comic Con. They were doing live screen printing there, and that's a cool shirt. So I picked up some merch this year.
Awesome.
I'm a fanboy.
Yeah, you are a fanboy. We're both fanboys, and we got to see each other quite a bit this weekend.
We hung out a lot. It was great.
We did.
I will say, before we even, I haven't even told you this, I ran into Pablo. I ran into a couple CBC fans, and they were like, without, you know, they weren't coordinating. They were like, when's the next live show? When can we see you three in a room together? And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make it a priority.
Oh, that is very nice. And I will also, to bounce off of that, and by the way, the whole idea here, we're going to do the wrap-up, we're going to talk through some of the big news items of the show, but I was thinking about it this morning. We're taping this on Sunday. I was personally too wrecked to go back to the con today, but the highest, the best, the absolute pleasure of the show was seeing people, and this happened a lot, actually, more than I'd expect, coming up to me and being like, hey, you're in Comic Book Club, right? You're Alex. I listen to the show. I love the show. I watch the show. It was wonderful and delightful. So if you did come up and say hi, thank you. If you didn't, but you listened anyway, thank you as well.
That's great. We're super intimidating. But we also talked to Ron as well from the Discord and a bunch of other people. So very fun.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely great seeing people. So before we get into it and talk through some of the news items and just to like set this over the whole thing, we're going to talk about our winner and loser of the con.
Wow, you're so scandalous. We're going to be mean girling all over this con.
We are going to be mean girling. Let's talk about overall thoughts of the con. Like at this point, I don't want to say that I've been to all 19 years of it, I want to say, but definitely like most of them.
Yes.
So what's your feeling on this one as the con develops?
I thought it was great. I mean, is it official that this is the biggest con?
Yeah.
In North America.
So I think that's been true for the past couple of years at this point, because here's the thing that's tricky. There's always like a little asterisk there because you got San Diego Comic-Con, but the San Diego Comic-Con Convention Center, if I recall the numbers correctly, is capped at 160,000 people. So there's no way of getting bigger official attendance numbers than 160. However, they transformed the entire town of San Diego into the con. So there are thousands of people that come there, don't go to the convention itself, but just go outside. So it's a little tricky to say that, but I know at least as of last year, we don't have attendance numbers for this year at this point as we're taping, but last year there were 200,000 people, which definitely like however many people are showing up in San Diego, that seems comparable, if not more, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, so it was the first day I was like, wow, the Thursday is usually never as busy as it was this year. So that was packed. On the other end, Saturday, yesterday felt a little lighter by the end. It feels like it was a very transactional day. I got there a little around noon and people were leaving because they had got their thing that they came to the con to do. So like, but in the hall, it was actually not crazy cramped. It wasn't as stressful to get around as it has been years past. I think they've developed a good system of where Artist Alley is, where the autograph stuff is, where the main floor is. There's great separation. The press area was very cool. Selfishly, I'll say that. But in general, like a well-organized con, it was great to be talking to people and the interviews we did. It was really fun.
The other thing I'll shout out, and we're all in our own bubbles with these sort of cons, the things that we're concentrating on, and New York Comic Con being so huge, there are so many different pockets of communities and different things going on there. Like, I don't think they have the anime con as part of it anymore. That once was like its own separate thing happening at the same time. But there's video games, there's card games, there's just people going and getting their Funko Pops and collectibles.
But Walmart's there.
Can I just early declare that the loser of the con? Like, what was that booth doing there? That was the weirdest thing.
So mad. Yeah.
Every time I passed by it on the con floor, there was a different person who I would overhear being like, why is Walmart here? Like, legitimately, that is no lie. So
they were doing live content, toyetic or toy-based content in their little studio they had there. So I don't know who watches that, but...
I get it. Like, I understand it in theory, but my most gatekeepy take is, like, Walmart is the level that should not be at a Comic-Con. Like, they just shouldn't be there. I'm sorry. Nothing against...
What are you talking about? I spent the whole day at the Kohl's booth. I was at the Gap Kids booth just partying.
Really? I was hanging out at Home Depot.
Yeah, man. They go nuts for the con.
But what I was going to say was, again, this is from my own bubble, but... they really amped up the TV and movie content this year. Like, there was a good amount of high-profile TV shows and movies and other panels like that. Like, there's been a couple of years of there, particularly with the COVID pandemic, where that went away, and it felt like, you know, they'd have three or four TV panels, and it was like, I don't know if anybody cares about this. But people actually cared about this stuff. But I don't think it overwhelmed the con. Like, there were huge comic announcements, and it really felt like there was a very even balance there between, like, this is a big con for comic books, and this is a big con for entertainment, and nothing is necessarily dominating the conversation, which, frankly, I like to see. It's very different from what we think about when we think about San Diego, where it's like, yeah, there's Hall H, and then comics is in a basement somewhere on the side.
Yeah, well, I think that's, they do a good job laying out the floor where, like, there was definitely, like, the DC Comics booth was around some of the other publishers over in one corner. Marvel was sort of on the opposite side. In the middle, there was your, like, Scholastic-type publisher. So, like, they spread it out so you had a couple places to go. It didn't feel like you were all the comics people were pinned in a certain area. Artist Alley had, like, the Tiny Onion booth and some other, like, press booths down there. So, like, that was an imprint. Like, that was, it's just nice. Everyone felt like they had space to breathe. And all the creators that we talked to and saw, we're having fun as well, as opposed to being stressful, I think.
And I think, more importantly for them, selling stuff. Like, we spent a lot of time at the IDW booth in particular, and they were starting to sell out of things after Thursday, which is kind of crazy. They're like, yeah, we just don't have it anymore. And I heard the same thing we were talking to. We did an interview with Chris Condon, and he was saying that News from the Fallout, which is his fantastic Image comics book with Jeffrey Allen Love, like, he's writing Wolverine, he's writing Green Arrow, he's writing all of these Marvel and DC titles, and that was the thing that was, like, getting snapped up in droves. And you can see the same thing happening everywhere. So even with everything else going on, and I think we got the same thing last year, Artist Alley is almost like the size of a smaller convention in and of itself. And people are doing business there, and that's just really great to see. People really engaged with comics and enjoying comics.
Yeah, for sure.
So on that note, I will mention also, just to give a little plug for ourselves, Justin and I did a ton of interviews at the con. Those are actually all live now on patreon.com/comicbookclub. I put them up as I was editing them, as I was getting them ready. They're ad-free on there for anybody at the $10 and up level on that ad-free tier. But if you want to check them out, they're going to be in the regular Comic Book Club feed. I'm rolling them out one a day, except for Wednesday, where we have the stack. So we have a bunch of interviews. Chris Condon, as I mentioned. Al Ewing is up already. We talked to Patrick Horvath from Beneath the Trees. We got an exclusive interview with the artist of Return to Sleepy Hollow. And what are we going to mention, Justin?
I was going to get Tim Seeley. We talked to about his Transformer, or his Godzilla Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book, which was really cool.
And one of my favorite ones, I think this is not rolling out until like a week from now, but AJ Locasio, who's the voice of Gambit and Gizzo, he wrote this kid's book, and that interview was great. That was so much fun.
We got into some wild stuff, and if you like Gambit or Gizmo, you will hear the characters speaking and saying some stuff you might not expect in the interview.
Yes. So great stuff. Look forward to that. Let's talk through the news items because there were some huge things that come out. I think we can keep it focused mostly on the comic book stuff, though, yeah. Depending on time, we'll get into some of the TV and movie stuff as well. But big one came out right at the retailer day, and then they expanded on it further yesterday. I want to say Marvel's Ultimate Universe is ending, according to Marvel, in April at the end of Ultimate Endgame. All of the titles are wrapping up, and I'm paraphrasing here, but David Gabriel, who is the publisher of Marvel Comics, actually, I think he got promoted to another level, but whatever, was talking about, like, they want to make sure that they have a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end that is going to live on in trade collections for years to come, which, to start off on the positive, I will say, like, that's really good. You Smart. And I were talking about this yesterday, and this is nothing against anybody at Marvel, but, like, everybody knows their trade game, their bookstore game, is nowhere near as good as DC's, and I think that comes down to not having these, like, you could read this and you are done with this story type thing. Right,
complete, that DC, like, exactly. Bite-sized stories that they can take.
Yeah, but what's your takeaway from this announcement, Justin?
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense. In horse racing, a lot of times you'll take your prize pony, your big money earner, and after they really rake in the cash, take them out behind the barn and shoot them dead. I think that's how Seabiscuit ended, if I'm correct.
I haven't seen the movie, but I'm excited to check it out.
Yeah, really fun movie, especially with that ending. The thing is, like, it just feels crazy to me. The Ultimate line is, like, driving so much of Marvel sales, both from a money point of view, but just story-wise. I think that's where we think the excitement is in a lot of the Marvel areas of their own universe. So, like, the idea that they're like, it's over for sure. No way it's coming back. I'm like, I just don't know if that, like, you go.
No, I was going to say, just like, not to tip our head or call anybody out in a specific, but based on conversations we have this weekend, I think we have reason to think, no, they are not actually ending the Ultimate Universe. And you were pointing out when we were chatting about it yesterday that everybody had the same reaction, which was, yeah, right, when they announced this. Yeah. And you were feeling like they're tipping their hand a little too much, like they've gone back to this well too many times.
Well, I just think, like, there's a clear difference. DC used to do this with, like, the DC universe is changing, we got another crisis, but, like, then they do it again, and it's sort of, you feel a little tricked. And now I think DC's transitioned, and they're like, hey, we're doing this big thing, and then next we have another big thing, and it feels like it's building momentum and just topping itself. When to be like, the Ultimate Universe is ending, final, not going to see it again. And I'm like, we know, and at the very least, it's going to come back at some point. So, like, right. This is, don't try to fool us. We're not here for that anymore.
Yeah. I appreciate them bringing the story that Jonathan Hickman and folks set up at the beginning to hopefully a satisfying close, rather than the final issue of Ultimate Endgame being like, and now a new universe, which honestly still could probably happen, because that is always very frustrating when you're reading an event and the last 5 to 10 pages are like, set it up the next story. Like, I don't know, it's like reading a novel and you get to the last chapter and it's like, you got to read another novel to find out more, which happens with series sometimes. But
yeah,
most of the time you want that beginning, middle, and end that we're talking about. Here's the thing that I worry about with this. What I worry about with this is it came out so strong with Jonathan Hickman and Ultimate Spider-Man. And that's really been, nothing against the other titles, but, like, really the spine of the line. Without that, what are they going to go to? Like, are they going to have the same level of, like, intense quality of the line in Ultimate Universe 3.0 or whatever's going to happen? We'll have to wait until April or May or something to find out. But that's the worry there. Like, are they actually going to keep it going just to keep it going? Or do they have something lined up after the end of this Ultimate Universe that is going to be as big? I don't know.
Well, and what was so successful about this one is the thrust of the story, the maker, this countdown, this told like sort of in time on a month to month basis for these main books, like, is really cool. It's a compelling story to get drawn up in. So hopefully if they end this story, which I think they need to, and whatever comes after it will have a compelling push. And maybe they're just like, the Ultimate Universe is ending, but maybe the Extreme Universe is coming. Or like, if it's just a change of name, but they still give it an interesting thrust, then that's cool.
New Universe, baby. Bring back that Earth with a lightning strike it for the classic advertisement.
I mean, that's cool. But here's the thing. I also think, you know, we're heading toward the movies again with new dimensions, universes colliding. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure in the comics to do something similar, which we've just seen so many times. And I hope they don't just be like, well, we're having some people from the Ultimate Universe are crossing over to the main universe or vice versa. And that's going to be a problem for everyone.
Well, we will have to see. Why don't we talk about another one? This is one of the first big announcements of the con. We knew this was coming. This was not a surprise, but we did get the full lineup of DC's new rejuvenated Vertigo imprint. This was the first big panel of the con. They did it right off of Thursday, which
we were both there.
We were both there. I thought that was so smart to be like, hey, we're going to get this out right up front of absolutely everybody else. And I really do think it was part of the conversation over the course of the con. I'll try to read through these very quickly for anybody who missed the announcement. But you got Nice House by the Sea by James Tynion IV and Alvaro Martinez Bueno, beginning with issue 7. Bleeding Hearts by Dennis Camp and Stipan Morion. End of Life by Kyle Starks and Steve Pugh. The Peril of Brutal Dark by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips. 100 Bullets, The U.S. of Anger by Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso. Necretaceous by Tom Taylor and Derek Robertson. Fanatic by Grace Ellis and Hannah Templar. The Crying Dolls by Mariko Tamaki and Rosemary Valero O'Connell. Black Tower, The Raven Conspiracy by Ram V and Mike Perkins. And A Walking Shadow by Simon Spurrier and Aaron Campbell. And these are going to start rolling out next year, I think.
Yeah, February.
They're all ongoing series, except some of them, specifically Black Tower and where's the other one? The one by Chris Condon and Jacob Phillips.
The Peril of the Black Brutal Dark.
Yeah, there you go. Those are both going to be 6-issue arcs, sort of like their own novels, graphic novellas, and then they'll move on to a next 6-issue arc of that thing. The thing that I was really struck by this announcement, and Chris Conroy, who's the executive editor of The Line, said it late in the panel, was they were aiming to get teams who had worked together before and they knew could reliably turn in books in a timely manner. And I know that's like the driest, most businessy thing to think about with this, but I also think like it's such a smart way of thinking about this line versus being like, we're doing 5 flashy books and then they never come out or one of them hits a bunch of hiccups. These are all people, and we talked to Chris about this, not to spoil the interview, but like he said he's been working on this for 2 years at this point.
Yeah.
So they're ready to go.
Spoiling the interview, but like he was approached by Vertigo like over 2 years ago and they were the first team that they went to, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's super exciting. It feels like there's an enthusiasm to work with these particular teams. It's not just grabbing a marquee artist and being like, who can we put on this and get them to make a story? This is like, what do you guys want to bring to us to launch Vertigo? And that's just exciting because these are complete ideas, complete stories. There's such a variety here. Just in the panel, I was like, these are wild.
Yeah.
Wildly different ideas.
Is there a title that or titles that jumped out to you in particular?
I mean, I love The Nice House by the Sea. Happy that that's sort of going to be the like almost anchor book for this and bring in all those readers from James Tynion's book that's already been going. But the couple that jumped out to me as being super exciting are the Chris Conan and Jacob Phillips book. I love those guys from That Texas Blood. This is something that feels Jacob's art is very different here. A really interesting style change for him. So I'm definitely psyched about that one. It was cool hearing Brian Azzarello talk about 100 Bullets. Like, he's a maniac and in the best way.
I love seeing that guy on paddles. And we've talked about this before on the live show. We've interviewed him a couple of times, and he doesn't care about any of this. Like, his whole bit, if anybody has ever seen him, is he goes up and you ask him a question, he's either like, no. Or yes, and that's it. Unless you engage him in something he actually wants to talk about, and then he becomes animated. But
he's such an old cuss in the best, that's a positive thing, I think. And And I will say, when we've hung out with him on the Comic-Con on a cruise ship, we, like, legit partied with him. And he's just, underneath all that, like, persona, like, he's just a regular dude who likes to hang out and laugh and joke around. So, like, yeah. I mean, it's just wild. Seeing him up there just doing it, it's so funny. In
yeah, I think it helps knowing him from that perspective, because yeah. First time I think I saw him on a paddle, I was like, what is going on here? But yeah. Knowing the backstory of, like, how he engages... The other thing about that book, 100 Bullets, The U.S. of Anger, is I think it's good to have a known Vertigo property coming back. That's smart. But also, Brian Azarel talked about that it was him and Eduardo Risso both responding to the political situations in the respective yeah. countries and being like, what can we say about it? Where I saw some reactions online, and I think this is complimentary, but being like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Because yeah, right. they could potentially go very hard with that book.
I think it's going to be. The art looks amazing. I like that it's going to have a hard edge to it. That feels very old school Vertigo to be mm-hmm. pushing boundaries. And that's great that they're able to bring that flavor back. The other one I was excited about, perhaps no surprise, is the Dennis Camp book, Bleeding Hearts, which is like a sort of zombie culture book, like a post-apocalyptic zombie world where the zombies have developed culture. It's got some really just smart... like naming devices for these characters. The art by Stepan Morian is awesome. There's Stepan Morian. It's awesome. Like, it looks so cool and different. And again, very classic Vertigo.
The ones that I'll shout out, End of Life. I just really like Kyle Starks and Steve Pugh, so I'm always excited to check out whatever they're doing. But the two that really surprised me were A Walking Shadow, which is the Simon Spurrier, Aaron Campbell book. Mm. And Simon Spurrier, when they were like, hey, could you give a quick explanation of the book? And he was like, instead, I'm going to do a monologue from Macbeth. And then he explained
Badass.
It. Very badass, beautiful to hear. He has a great speaking voice, but he also followed up explaining the plot, that it's basically a bunch of people wake up all tied to a boat in the middle of the woods, and they realize very quickly there is a creature that's hunting them, so they need to get out of the woods to avoid the creature, and as they walk, they tell each other their backstories, and it just... Yeah. Sounds like perfect Vertigo fodder to me. The other one that I was really struck by was The Crying Dolls by Mariko Tamaki and Rosemary Valero O'Connell, which seems like maybe there's a supernatural element, but it's mostly set in the 1970s in New York at the beginning of the AIDS crisis. And looking at that and seeing the way they're drawing the covers, it feels like something that just came right out of Vertigo from the prime Vertigo era. And that gave me a little tingle. It got me very excited seeing it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, like, these all sound great. Like, I'm going to definitely get into all these. I will say on A Walking Shadow, very cool. And I feel like that's a great bookend. If A Nice House on the Lake and A Nice House by the Sea are the sort of heavy hitter titles, A Walking Shadow feels like the new version of that. Mm-hmm. The new, like, Nice House on the Lake.
Well, and we should mention, I forgot to write this down here, but Swamp Thing 89 was a crazy kicker announcement at the end there. Rick Veitch, back in the day, he finished his Swamp Thing run, but then it was never published because the storyline was Swamp Thing meets Jesus Christ, and it was too politically and religiously a hot button thing. So they ended up not publishing it. Now they are going to publish it, all four issues, as a Black Label book, since the separation here is Vertigo is creator-owned, Black Label involves the DC characters in some way. So even though Swamp Thing was a Vertigo book, now it's going to be a Black Label book. And the thing that I thought was very neat that they talked about is both the single issues and the trade collection, they're going to publish with the trade dress from back in the day. So if you own the individual issues of Swamp Thing, it will fit right in with that collection. If you own the trades, I may have the numbers wrong, but if you own Rick Veitch's Volume 1 and Volume 2, they'll publish this as Volume 3 and it'll fit right out on the shelf. And I was like, that's cool.
That's cool.
That is a cool
It's such a completist vision for the mm-hmm. whole thing. It's great. It's really good stuff.
Here's another big thing to talk about. This is obviously a big part of the discussion of the con, is the use of AI. And Jim Lee got things started in a big way at the retailer day, doing the speech that basically everybody applauded online in particular, at least again in my bubble. I'm doing a little bit of it here. You can go and check out. They got the whole speech over at Comics Beat. They published it there. It's a fantastic speech. You should read the whole thing. But he said, that's the point, the smudge, the rough line, the hesitation. That's what makes my work come alive. AI doesn't dream, feel, or make art. It aggregates it. DC Comics will not support AI-generated storytelling or artwork. Not now, not ever, as long as Anne DePies and I are in charge. And really beautiful. Like, honestly, yeah, just having an artist at the head of the company is really cool. But then, the next day, at the Spider-Man panel, where C.B. Smulski, the EIC of Marvel, was, the first fan question was, hey, Jim Lee said this yesterday, is Marvel going to also make a statement against AI? And C.B. Skibulski, and I'm boiling it down here as well, said, yes, we've never used AI. We never used it. We will not be using it. We don't condone it in the Marvel Comics division. And generally the reaction real online was like, yeah, all right.
Which, yeah. Well, I mean, just hearing how you recap them, Jim Lee's feels like a statement, a stand on your soapbox and be like, we don't do this. We never do. This isn't right. It's important to make this stand. And CB, for what he's doing, was more like, legally, I should say this. And, you know, I feel like they're both not going to use AI, but just as a rallying point, like, like, come on, CB, like, give us a little juice here. And yeah, I think he just doesn't have the credibility or interest in being a leader here, it feels like, while Jim Lee very much does.
Yeah, I mean, his background is, he's written comics, and we don't need to get into the controversy around that, but yeah, he is a talent manager. That is his main skill. That is his best skill that probably led him to be EIC. So he is definitely looking, I'm sure, at things from a business forward perspective. But still, it's good that they said something on the record. I will note, we've been talking about this a little bit in our Discord this weekend, that there are questions about AI usage in the Wonder Man trailer from Marvel, which is one of the announcements that we'll get to in a second. And it's really stuck with me. I was in the room for Spider-Man when I was transcribing his quote, where he's like, we don't condone it in the Marvel Comics division. I was like, that's very specific. Interesting.
Well, and similarly, Jim Lee said DC Comics will not support AI. He didn't say DC across the board. It's just Jim Lee's sounded good and exciting, while CB sounded like, just remember, the comics division, we are not doing it. So, that just remembered I said comics. Yeah, like it just leaves it. Yeah, it's like, again, he needs a speechwriter to help.
Regardless, good. I'm glad they both did it. I'm glad that's out there.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Let's get back to the more fun announcements. This, I'm going to throw out there, I will say, without calling it a winner or loser yet, but this, I think, was the wildest announcement of the entire con. I was in the room for this, for the Jim Lee and Friends panel, and they announced that DCKO is going to welcome Sub-Zero from Mortal Kombat, Homelander from The Boys,
of course,
Vampirella, Red really Sonja, and Samantha Strong, the serial killer bear from IDW's Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees.
That's where I have some follow-up questions. Right there in that last one.
Yes, and I will tell you the feeling of the room here, because it was crazy how they rolled this out. So the Jim Lee and Friends panel, the whole idea is, you know, Jim Lee is there, you don't know who else is going to show up. And first person he brought up was Troy Baker, who has done a ton of voices. They revealed that he's going to be doing the Joker in the Killing Joke DC High Volume thing. And it was cool, like, hearing him talk and talk about doing the voice. That was pretty neat. Then the next person they brought up was, I want to say, Rob Bood, the co-creator of Mortal Kombat, who has been friends with Jim Lee for a while. And they showed off the trailer for Mortal Kombat 2, and I was like, I don't know why this is happening. Okay. But then the reason it was happening is at the end was Jim Lee revealed that, you know, they've done Mortal Kombat comic stuff, and they did Injustice, which is the DC fighting game, but Jim Lee apparently has been asking Ed Boon, for years about getting Mortal Kombat characters in DC Comics. And Ed has always said, no, no, no. And finally, he convinced him to let Sub-Zero be in. And people are like, what? Sub-Zero? That's crazy. That's a ridiculous thing to happen. But like you said, makes sense. And then he's like, to talk more about this, here's Scott Snyder, the writer of DCKO. And then they started just rolling out this graphic. And the concept here, for anybody who doesn't know DCKO, without belaboring the point, is it's this tournament between 32 heroes and villains. They need to fight to gain this Omega energy to beat Darkseid. So the idea here is they realize they can open up portals to pocket dimensions that have other characters and other worlds to both train and gain even more Omega energy. There was promo art from Jeff Spokes. I don't know if you could be drawing this, but it sounds like it's like a bonus level in the video game thing. Yeah. So they didn't say this, but it sounds like it's going to be a one-shot. It's not part of the main tournament itself.
Well, I feel like, and sorry to stop you there, but I feel like the conversation is like, wait, we can't have Sub-Zero fighting Green Lantern in here and have it messing up the tournament brackets. I'm like, I think this is a total side fun thing that is just exciting that they are doing weird things like this and very video game, which is what the core sort of the gaminess of this event is the fun part. I think that's what's lighting up everyone's brains is the bracket of it. The, like, choose your fighter of it. And to bring in, you know, hidden characters, of course. That's what all these fighting games have done for years.
100% agree with you. I know it's been a big argument on the Discord for the past couple of days, but I would understand if it was in DCKO number 2, all of these characters show up, and I'd understand being like, ah, this event is so focused on Superman and these other characters, what are we doing here? But as like a one-shot on the side, absolutely, why not? And just to kind of like talk through it, the Sub-Zero of it all, like we explained, that makes sense. It's a Mortal Kombat tournament. You're bringing in a Mortal Kombat character. Homelander, Vampirella, and Red Sonja are all Dynamite characters, and Dynamite has an ongoing crossover relationship with DC. So again, makes 100% total sense to me. Plus, Homelander started as a DC Comics character before the boys moved over to Dynamite. The last one, this is just a theory, and I tried to get more information about it, but Scott Snyder, since the beginning of DC All In, has talked about the goal there, and we talked about this on, like, that hotel roof last year at New York Comic Con with him, where he's like, of course, we got to sell comics as DC, but the goal is to get people back in comic book shops and comic book, get excited about comic books. And he, every time he talks about this, he's like, whether it's DC All In, the Absolute Universe, the Ultimate Universe at Marvel, Energon Universe, he mentions Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and IDW a lot. He uses the phrase like rising tide lifts all ships a lot. He talks about comics being a big tent a lot. And if I was to intuit, Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, big hit for IDW, big hit for the comic book industry, but most people don't know it. And taking Samantha, the serial killer bear, beyond being just a ridiculous juxtaposition with everything else going on there, it takes a character that's on the cusp and gives it the biggest stage possible. And I think the goal there is that rising tides thing, just to be like, hey, we love this book. Let's elevate it. Let's put it in front of as many people as possible. And again, this is just me intuiting, but if that's the goal behind it, I think that's great.
Yeah, and like it's just crazy to think that this book that we found on, when it first came out, and it was, we were so excited about it, Scared Pete, and now that main character, it's in its second super interesting arc, getting very, very popular, and now the character's appearing in a DC major crossover event is insane.
Yeah.
And exciting.
We're going to keep on with DC stuff because they had enormous announcements over the course of the weekend. One of the things they announced at the DC KO panel, and by the way, they announced a lot more stuff about DC KO that I don't think we need to talk about here or have time to unless you want to.
No, well, I just wouldn't talk about it because it literally spoils maybe the next couple issues. So,
yeah, which was crazy. But we're talking about it in sort of theory, sort of like around it. But yeah, they laid out the next bunch of brackets, the fights, they spoiled some of the concepts. But I think from like watching the DC KO panel, and we know Joshua Williamson and Scott Snyder pretty well, they were, how was I describing them to you? Like two giddy brothers talking about their comic book characters fighting up there on the stage.
Yeah, they're just winding each other up in a way that is such an infectious energy, and it matches this event so hard. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy to see that core relationship and the core excitement of why we started doing this show, why we like comics. It's like, well, actually, wait, what if they fought? And they are bringing that to the stage as this event has become real. Is just super exciting, and that's why I don't want to spoil if anyone hasn't heard about these first fights and the first sort of round reveals that they did, because the solicits, I think, are going to spoil some of this. It's so fun to experience it in time, in real
time. Yeah, it's infectious, and being in that room with DCKO, people were losing their minds as they revealed these matchups, and it's just, there's a palpable difference between we are pitching you a product, which, of course, that's essentially what it is, and what they, particularly Scott and Josh, were doing on that stage, where it's basically them being like, hey, you want to hear the coolest thing ever? This is really cool.
Yes, exactly. About
it. And it's very nice. It's very sweet. But the thing that we can talk about is after it's crazy that they did this, but after DCKO, they talked about what the next publishing initiative is, very similar to DC All In, where it's just sort of like an ethos for the publishing line versus an event. It's called DC Next Level. And the idea here is they reached out to a bunch of creators that they really like working with or haven't worked with or haven't worked with in a while and said, what's your dream book? What would you be excited about like shooting your shot with? Whether it works or not, we're going to throw it out there and give you the chance to like make this title a huge success. And so the creators they're working with, I'll talk about some specific teams in a second, but the creators they mention are Dennis Camp, Tony Fleece, Jamal Campbell, Danny, Jeff Lemire, Joshua Williamson, James Herron, Jorge Corona, Greg Rucka, Mariko Tamaki, Scotty Young, and more. And the titles they announced, which are going to come out with new number ones alongside other things, starting, I think, at a cadence of like one or sometimes two a month after DCKO, are Deathstroke the Terminator, Batwoman, Firestorm the Nuclear Man, Lobo, Zatanna the Demon, Batman Shadow of the Bat, and Barbara Gordon Breakout, which sounds really interesting.
What is that?
I don't know. And the only ones they revealed at this time were Greg Rucka and Danny on Batwoman, which brings Greg Rucka back to Batwoman after a pretty fractious break with DC Comics about 15 years ago, something like that, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
And he says this is him telling the story he wanted to tell back in the day, but couldn't because things got so bad. The other team that was mentioned was Scotty Young and Jorge Corona on Lobo. And then finally, right at the end of the panel, they revealed that Joshua Williamson will be writing Legion of Superheroes, which is his dream job. And it sounds like, they didn't specifically say this, but it sounds like he will be moving off Superman at that point, and then moving on to Legion. So that's a lot of stuff I just threw out at you. Any thoughts, Justin?
Yeah. I mean, super exciting. It's what I was saying earlier, where DC feels like they are like just topping themselves. And I like, because this main event is going to be so like Superman, Darkseid, the absolute characters, big Trinity characters, that it's really cool that this event is going to be diving down, like next level. The next level is down, I think, into some characters that don't get as much play and telling super interesting stories about them. So I think that's great. I'm super excited for Batwoman. I love Rucka. I love him getting to come back and do something that he's wanted to do forever. Controversial on our Discord as well. Firestorm the Nuclear Man is very exciting to me, a character I like that always feels like is on the outside and is weird. And if someone can make that, if a team can make that character weird and interesting, that's really great. And the other one, sort of strangely, is Batman Shadow of the Bat. Mm. Curious, we're adding another Batman title. This one's going to have to go into some different directions, and I think that's exciting.
Yeah, I'm really interested in all this as well. And I've seen a little bit of like scoffing online from people. And this always happens about the idea of like, why are you putting these titles out there? You're just setting them up to fail. And I think there's a misunderstanding of nobody in the comic book industry is like, put out that Firestorm book and watch it burn, no pun intended. Like, that's not happening. They want to put out a Firestorm book that surprises everybody and does well. And they can't do that unless they try it. You know, Scott Snyder told this story on the panel, which I think he's told before, about Ghibli driving to Scott's house and Scott being like terrified he was going to get fired, but Jim Lee instead saying, we need to build up the comic book division and we're going to put the money and the resources behind it to make it work. So like, Absolute Universe, DC All-In, that was them shooting their shot, and now they're continuing to take risks. Like, some of them are Batman titles, which are less of a risk because Batman sells incredibly, but you can't make a top-tier Deathstroke the Terminator book unless you try to do it, you know? So we'll see. Maybe it'll work, maybe it'll not, but I appreciate them taking chances. That's good. And a couple of other things came out. This is one that was mentioned on the Boom Studios panel, and then I got to see James Tynan talk about it at the Tiny Onion panel. They're going to be doing Swamp Thing is Killing the Children.
Finally, we know.
Yes.
It's not something, it's Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing. He was very specific on the Tiny Onion panel to be like, DC would like me to let you know that Swamp Thing doesn't actually kill children, which was like,
very right. Funny.
Yeah, apparently some people were very worried in DC. And not to swerve off of that, it was also very interesting to hear James Tynan talk about at that panel where he was like, I value my time at DC. I love all the people at DC. But he was talking about that coming to New York Comic Con used to be his worst week of the year because I'm paraphrasing here. I don't remember exactly word for word what he said, but he was talking about like just hyped up being working for DC and not being able to talk about things and this being this political dance of like jockeying for titles and everybody sort of like pushing against each other while they're doing it. He also talked about, he specifically said like, you know, that he would have to have a meeting with an editor and have 3 years of plans shot down in an instant and then have to go out and talk to fans and smile. And I was like, that's a very specific example of something that definitely happened to you, which sucks.
Yeah. Wow.
But regardless, Swamp Thing is Killing the Children is coming out. That's going to be a Boom DC Black Label book, and that sounds pretty cool. That was a lot of DC stuff. Why don't we move on and talk about some other stuff? We got Marvel TV and Animation Panel, and they showed off a bunch of things, but mainly we know a bunch of dates. January 27th, 2026, Wonder Man is coming out. It was moved from December. March, Daredevil Born Again Season 2, Summer, X-Men 97 Season 2, Fall, we've got Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man Season 2, and Winter is Vision Quest, the Vision series. Found out a bit more about all of those. This is already announced, but Jessica Jones is going to be in Daredevil Born Again Season 2. X-Men 97 is going to be a lot of Apocalypse stuff, as we knew. Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is going to have Venom and Gwen Stacy, which is going to make at least one of our commenters very excited. And Vision Quest, this is weird. They talked about the concept. The concept of the show is White Vision is basically having a mental break and imagining all of the robot and android characters in the MCU as real people in his head. And somehow, at the same time, they're introducing Speed. Tommy, who is Wiccan's brother, is going to be in the show. I think also, what's his name? Dominic Fortune? Is that it? The bounty hunter.
Oh,
You know, I mean, the guy with the weird V costume.
Yeah. Well, and this feels like this is even more connected to the Tom King Vision series, potentially. Like, it feels like it's taking those ideas and pushing them in a different direction.
What do you think about this slate overall? How are you feeling about it?
I mean, it's just looking at it, it's like, wow, what a different slate this is than the last, you know, 5 years, seven years of Marvel slate. Like, Daredevil, success, you know, talked about, and we're getting that. That feels like the most exciting one. Or maybe X-Men 97 season 2 is even more exciting. That was such a great win. Like, there's a lot of behind the scenes drama happening, but they also announced season 3 is coming for this as well, mm-hmm. I believe you said. So yeah. That's exciting. I'm glad Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is out. Like, all these are sort of exciting. Wonder Man's the biggest question mark. And you mentioned the teaser. Like, it looks a little, like, strange. Maybe there's AI involved.
Yeah, there was somebody, I don't know how to feel about this, but there was somebody who said they went on the con floor and asked somebody at the Marvel booth about the posters they use for, like, the older Wonder Man movie. And the person at the Marvel booth said that it was done by an artist in Photoshop, and then AI assisted to smooth it over a little bit, which sucks. And the footage, this was pointed out by one of our folks at Discord. I won't call out his name in case he doesn't want us to. But the footage of the old Wonder Man movie really does look like AI stuff. Like, there's a shot where his arm weirdly gets longer and stuff for a second. And I don't know. It's a little it's a little icky.
And, like, in general, isn't Wonder Man sort of the last vestige of, like, when Marvel just made a bunch of stuff? So, who knows? It's been a bad year for Marvel TV, I feel like, from getting people's attention. Like, I think we've enjoyed some of the shows. The Eyes of Wakanda, I thought, was cool, and the Marvel Zombies had its moments, but it's just been a tough time right now.
The shine is off a little bit, but I will say, in the driest possible way, I'm glad they are getting a consistent cadence for these shows. Like, it seems like they're coming out every 2 or 3 months, and that seems good. Like, if they could have that going for 2027 and beyond as well, like, not to overstuff it, but rather than, we have 4 episodes of Eyes of Wakanda coming out, and 2 weeks later, 4 episodes of Marvel Zombies, and that's it. Which is weird, instead being like, okay, we finished that show. What's the next show? Oh, that's coming up in a month. Cool. That's a better place to be. Over to the Invincible panel. The big things there is season 4 premieres in March, and Lee Pace is going to be the voice of Emperor Thrag, who is basically the big bad of the Invincible universe. That's cool.
Yeah. Cool.
I don't have much more to say about that. We're definitely hitting the quick hit. Yeah, the quick hit portion of our announcements. But that's cool. I like Lee Pace. I'm glad season 4 is coming out in March. Moving back to comic book announcement, Joshua Williamson is writing Iron Man with Carmen Carnero. Mostly, I will say, at first, my big takeaway here is, like, it's crazy that Joshua Williamson is writing right now Superman for DC, now Iron Man for Marvel, and also G.I. Joe for Energon. So, like, what a busy guy. But the take of it, once I looked at the preview pages they put out, is actually kind of interesting. His take is, like, that Iron Man in the cave, Tony Stark in the cave didn't invent Iron Man. He invented Tony Stark. And so what AIM is trying to do, they show a scene of it looks like Iron Man's origin all over again, but it's actually another guy who created an armor. And Madame Mask comes out, and the guy is like, hey, I can do it. I can still create this armor. And she's like, we don't care about the armor. We don't care about creating the armor. We want to create another Tony Stark, and then kills him. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. That's a good, strong take for a book.
Well, and what I like about that is, like, it's sort of using this evil science of AIM. Something AIM is usually just, like, cannon fodder lately, and, like, to have them be like, no, we're actually trying to use science and experimentation in the most maniacal possible way to create an anti-Iron Man, anti-Tony Stark. Like, that's cool. That's an exciting idea. So I'm into that for sure. And the thing about Joshua Williamson is, like, not only is he working on all these things, he's, like, a major creative, like, notch in all these areas. Like, in Energon, he's, like, there making big decisions. In the Superman and DC world, he's making these big decisions for not just, you know, churning out scripts, like, where the future of all these characters are going. So the fact that he's jumping over to Iron Man is wild.
Yeah. Another Marvel announcement. This is at the Spider-Man panel. They announced it, and we kind of knew this was coming anyway, but there's going to be a Spider-Man-Venom-Carnage crossover, though Carnage has been canceled. He's still going to be part of it, called Death Spiral. That's going to be a 9-part thing starting in February. And then also in the summer, there's going to be a big event called Queen in Black, which is Hela as the Queen in Black. We kind of got some information about this from Al Ewing, though he couldn't really tease anything. So if you want to find out more about that, but cool.
Yeah. Interview as well with Al. So yeah. Worth checking
out. So not much more about that. Another neat thing that they mentioned at the Gotham City panel was Sirens Love Hurts, which is a four-part Black Label series from T.D. Howard and Babs Tarr. They called it Long Halloween for the Girlies, which I thought was pretty funny because each issue takes place in a different season. It starts with Oliver Queen and Dinah getting engaged and ends with their wedding, and it follows her, Catwoman, Poison Ivy, and Harley, but it also, since it's Black Label, the non-continuity shows Harley has just gotten out of a breakup, presumably with the Joker, and doesn't realize that maybe the person she's been looking for all along is right there. So there's romance, there's action. Babs Tarr apparently is drawing ridiculous costumes for everybody in every issue because they love cosplayers and they want to give cosplayers a lot to do. That seems fun.
Very fun, yeah. Another more good stuff from DC.
Yeah, and another thing that got mentioned that I thought was pretty cool on the same panel, Absolute Catwoman. This is a 6-issue series coming in 2026. Che Grayson and Scott Snyder are writing it. The artist is Bengal. And this is, it sounds like it's going to be a current continuity adventure for Catwoman, but also flashback backstory, how she got from the point where we saw her as a kid in Absolute Batman to now where she's wearing a weird mask and she's a thief. And they said that kind of the take on her is rather than just stealing stuff, she's trying to figure out how to stay alive by getting ahead, by being part of that elite upper class of the Absolute Universe. So rather than stealing shiny stuff, she is stealing information and trading it in information. They described her as the Batman of the Absolute Universe, that she has all the gadgets, she has all the resources.
That's cool.
And Nick Dragotta has designed apparently a lot of stuff for her.
That's awesome. I mean, they just keep finding new ways to, in the Absolute Universe specifically, sort of get a little weirder. And that's another thing we talked to Al Ewing about, just the idea behind the ways that the Absolute Universe is affecting the heroes and the characters in there in new and interesting ways, and why Green Lantern gets to be so weird, and why this book, Catwoman, gets to be her taking on qualities of Batman from the regular universe and like pushing into a new area.
Yeah. And I do want to mention something that I always hesitate to even kind of point out, but I did think it was interesting because this is always part of the conversation. On the Gotham City panel, there were more women on the panel than men, which I was like, they didn't point it out. They didn't talk about it. I shouldn't be pointing it out or necessarily talking about it. Just let it be. But at the same time, I think it's laudable because that's always been part of the conversation, particularly for the Batline, like female representation in comics. So I was happy to see that little bit. Here's another big thing that got announced is Marvel revealed Shadows of Tomorrow, which is their, not event, but sort of like line-wide capsule for the X-Men books after the Age of Revelation event. So they're coming out next year. Tons of titles that they announced. Going to read through them as quickly as possible, but we got X-Men from Jed McKay and Tony Daniel is the new artist on that. Uncanny X-Men from Gail Simone and David Marquez, that's the same team as now. Wolverine from Saladin Ahmed and Martin Kokolo, which is the same team as now. Then the new ones are Cyclops, which is a 5-issue series from Alex Pactadal and Roger Antonio. Generation X-23 from Jody Hauser and Jacopo Commandi.
Interesting.
Inglorious X-Force from our boy Tim Seeley and Michael Stabaria. Magic and Colossus, a 5-issue series from Ashley Allen and Jermaine Peralta. Rogue, a 5-issue series from Erica Schultz and Luigi Zagaria. Storm, Earth's Mightiest Mutant from Merwe Ayodele and Frederica Manson, which is, I believe, the same team, but going forward into new number one. And Wade Wilson Deadpool from Benjamin Percy and Jeff Shaw. Dog loves that one. And that is, I mean, I could talk through any of the takes here, but that one was interesting because I think we had speculated based on a little bit, but found out based on this panel, this is a more serious Deadpool, which,
yeah,
I gotta say, good. Like,
I think it's good too. We've gone too far with Deadpool being like such a goof, or in the movie, I think it was the most intense thing where he's just indestructible and it's just about how many times you can jab a sword into him. And it's like, we need to find some new air here for him.
Yeah. How do you feel about this in a whole? Anything jumping out at you? Any overall takes?
Lots of excitement here. I mean, I love that the Storm book is continuing with the same team. That's our, I guess, favorite book of this line right now, maybe. Uncanny X-Men continuing with the same team is also great. I like changing up the artist for Jed McKay's book. I think that's been a weaker point in the current run. And Tim Seeley, Inglorious X-Force, feels like a good adjective for what he's going to do here.
Yeah. The ones that I'll shout out, Magic and Colossus, I think that's cool seeing them together. And Ashley Allen has been really good on the Magic series so far. So excited to see that. And then Cyclops from Alex Pactadol. He talked about this a little bit on Blue Sky, but I think actually somebody else talked for him. It was like, this has been his dream book for years, and he has very specific plans and ideas for it. So I love that. I love that when a creator is like, exactly what we were talking about with the DC books. Like, it sounds like he is shooting his shot with the Cyclops book, so that should be cool.
Yeah.
We got a couple more things just to run through real quick here. IDW Dark, right at the top, announced their Smile book. This is going to be set during the 1980s, during Fashion Week. A Quiet Place, this is going to be set on a little island. There's a book called Iron Coffin, which is Dracula versus Hitler. But the one that was the coolest to me, we really liked The Exorcism at 1600 Penn. That was a great demonic possession exorcist story, but set at the White House. They're going to be doing a sequel, The Exorcism at Buckingham Palace, which I think is cool. Another announcement, Oni Press got Flux House, which is Matt Kint's imprint.
Yes.
You can listen to a nice long interview a little later this week that we did with Matt Kint and Hunter Gorenson, the head of Oni Press. But that's a good get for them. I just think Oni Press is making some smart moves.
Yeah, and the fact that Matt Kint gets to run wild, like, he's one of the creators out there that just likes to be creating constantly, and you'll hear in the interview, but like, loves comics most of all, and is going to always be innovating in the comic book space. So that's cool. I mean, I like the IDW Dark stuff, like A Quiet Place. That's a fun area to play in. Like, there's such a big world they can do there. And anytime we can see just more chalkboards that say sound question mark as the vulnerability, I think is great.
Yeah. A couple of other panels to talk about just because I attended them, and I'll throw them out there. I went to the Alien Earth panel. That one was crazy. And the reason it was crazy was it was an hour and a half long panel. They showed off the pilot, despite the fact that the entire season has aired, and the pilot was well over an hour. And so that left like 20 minutes for the actual panel itself, which was good, mind you. Like, Alan Sepinwall, who's a commensurate professional, was hosting it, kept it on point. They had most of the stars of the cast there, as well as one of the producers. They read a note from Ridley Scott. All of that stuff was very cool. I was just like, we've already seen the entire season, and probably everybody else has. So, like, show us select scenes or something. I don't know.
Anything. If there's anything the fans have seen, it's the first episode. And that's who's going.
I've watched
to
it three times at this point. I was like, I'm going to do work while this is going on. I'm fine.
Yeah.
Then they ended. One of the last things was the guy who plays Joe on the show was talking about his character. He's like, that's something I'd really like to follow in season two. And Alan turned to the audience like, who would like to see a season two? And everybody's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, we'll talk to FX. I'm like, come on, man. Why? Nothing against him. He's a great guy. But, like, why are you doing this panel? Announce the season two. What are we doing already? The other one, not to keep lumping on effects, but I went to the Beauty panel last night, which is based on, I don't want to speak for you, but one of my favorite comics. Love that comic. So good. Jeremy Hahn and, oh my God, I'm blanking on the name of the other guy who wrote it. I'm sorry to other guy. We've had them on the show. We've talked to them plenty of times. But for anybody to know, the concept of beauty is it takes place in a world where there's an STD where if you get it, you become more beautiful, like looking like your best self. And in the middle of that, some people start seemingly spontaneously combusting. So two cops, one with the beauty, one without, start looking into it and try to figure out whether people are somebody setting fire to people with the beauty. If this is a medical emergency, what's going on? It spirals out in plenty of weird ways. But it's like such a clear, simple concept right from the start with really well-drawn characters. The beauty of the show is a Ryan Murphy show. And just based on the footage and the way they were talking about it, it is now about Ashton Kutcher plays a flamboyant tech billionaire who is basically like the Joker, and he creates a formula called the Beauty that he wants to sell to rich people at the highest bidder. And they discover, because he's rushed it to market, after 880 days, you blow up into bloody chunks. So you have to keep getting boosters of the Beauty, otherwise that will potentially happen. And in the middle, Anthony Ramos is this assassin with like a silver eye patch and a snakeskin coat that's killing people. Evan Peters and I think Rebecca Hall are like international detectives on the case, going to Venice and all over the world. And he kept talking about like all of these mythology things that Ryan Murphy was adding there, and everybody was on the panel, like they're all big stars, and Ryan Murphy is very dry and witty and funny, but this was one of the most fan reaction things, like comic book fan. I'm like, that's not the story. What are you doing? So
weird. The other writer on the Beauty is Jason Hurley. Jason Hurley.
That's right. Yes. So it's fine. It was just like, you're changing stuff for changing stuff's sake. It's very annoying. I mentioned the Tiny Onion panel. It was lovely to hear them talk about their company. They are positively giddy about that, what they're doing. But the one thing that I'll mention is like, they said, James Tynion said they've sold 400,000 copies of Exquisite Corpses so far, which is crazy. And he mentioned it is the lowest attrition of any comic book he's ever written. Like, they are losing no readers. It actually grew in readers from issue 3 to issue 4. So that's pretty crazy.
That is crazy.
And the last thing, two things I'll mention, I sat in on this panel for Mala, which is the first Indian movie that's ever showed up at New York Comic Con. They seem very excited about that. That was nice. That's the nice thing I'll say about that. And then the last thing, I was not there for this, but they dropped the trailer for The Vampire Lestat at the Immortal Universe panel. And not only – have you watched Interview with the Vampire?
In my life, yes.
Not the movie. The TV series. You've got to watch
I watched I only watched the first season.
Oh, it is legitimately, like one of the best series – at least in the past few years, maybe ever. The second season is phenomenal. The Vampire Lestat trailer is great. And it just, the main thing it made me think is like, this is diametrically opposite quality-wise to everything else they're putting out from this Immortal Universe. But that was very exciting to me. That was a lot of stuff that we put out there. There were plenty of announcements we didn't miss. We did miss plenty of announcements we didn't talk about here. But based on all of this, let's break it down. Who's your winner? Who's your loser? It doesn't have to be a specific announcement. It could be a capsule thing. What are you thinking, Justin?
I mean, tough to choose one winner and one loser here. But I think you could read it in my voice. You could hear it in my voice. I think DC Comics is just winning here. They've been winning a lot of things lately. And I think this con, it just feels like there's so much enthusiasm and excitement there. Like, it's the place to be. And it's what I'm excited to be reading in the next couple of years. It feels like there's a lot going on. And then loser, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. From what we've just talked about here, the first thing that comes to mind is C.B. Sapolsky's announcement about AI, because it just felt like a second place finish where you actually sounded worse than you possibly could have.
Sure. I think, I mean, not to keep lumping on them, totally agree with you about DC. Also, their booth was great. They were giving out a little Daily Planet newspaper every day and free prizes to fans. So that was pretty delightful. But yeah, there's just a real palpable excitement around everything they're doing. Whatever gripes you might have about some of the specifics, I think they are going hard in the direction they're going, and they're really pushing. Conversely, not to keep lumping on Marvel, but I got to say, like, Shadows of Tomorrow, I think that announcement fell a little flat, even though personally there's some titles that I'm certainly looking forward to. And then the other one that I wanted to mention was, I don't remember. I don't know what it was. Oh, just the Ultimate Universe ending. Just because, like, that feels like a big announcement, but that I did not see a single person who was either not annoyed because they believed it was ending. They're like, why are you ending? I like this. This is annoying.
Yeah.
Or straight up didn't believe them. So,
yeah. Well, it just feels like they're just a step behind right now. They're the little brother in the room, which seems crazy given the last like 15, 20 years of comics and entertainment.
Well, and also because sales-wise, we don't really know specific sales figures, but like they are still dominating. Like, I think a lot of that is flooding the zone, frankly. But when you look at least ICV2's monthly charts, which are based on like actual sales from comic book shops, not to comic book shops, DC will usually have like 10 to sub 20 titles in there in the top 50, but Marvel regularly has like 30 titles in there. So they're doing well financially, but I think a lot of it, we were talking about this, it's like, it's too much. It's putting out content instead of thinking about the content that you're actually putting out there and being intentional about it. And as a reader, as a fan, I want to read stuff where I'm like, ooh, I'm excited. I would rather read one title I'm excited about than 10 titles I feel okay with, you know?
Yeah, like I don't want to just read comics to be like, uh-huh, that's the news. I know the way the players are moved down the field. Like that, and DC feels like there's just juice there, not to overuse a term that I've been using a lot lately, but it just feels they got the juice. It's that Omega energy fueling everything.
Yeah. Well, there you go. We would love to hear from you what your winners and losers of New York Comic Con are. Let us know in the comments, wherever you're watching or listening to the podcast. As usual, we have a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. I'm sure we'll be talking more about New York Comic Con there as well. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at Baltimore Comic Con, actually, because we'll be there next week.
Wow, way to sneak that in.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.